just like many small farms, we were looking for a way to bump up the revenue. And with the industrial hemp program, we saw this as an opportunity to, liven up the revenue for the farm and just bring the farm up to a newer level.
Yes, we're all reaching for newer levels. That was Rich Yang from Under the Sun Hemp in Morrisville, Pennsylvania. This is the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. My name is Eric Herlock, and on today's show, we're going to talk to Rich and his business partner, Nicholas Cole, about their hemp operation in Bucks County, where they just installed a new drying facility. But first, I want to talk a little bit more about the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit that's coming up in about 3 weeks. If you've been listening to the show, you've heard me mention it before. And as you know, Lancaster Farming Newspaper is hosting the reception on Monday night, October 7th, where we will be taping a live episode of this very podcast. But we haven't talked too much about the summit itself that takes place the next day, October 8th. So I thought we'd check in with someone from Team Pennsylvania, the group that's organizing the event. Hi, good morning, Kelly Kondratik. Welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Could you give us a brief introduction as to who you are and what you're up to with Team Pennsylvania?
Sure. My role here is Manager of Agriculture Policy and Programs. And really what Team Pennsylvania does, we're a public-private partnership for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, really to advance economic development initiatives.
Cool. And that is what brought you to the 2019 Pennsylvania Hemp Summit, right? You're actually the one putting it together, or one of a few putting it together?
One of a team. I like to recognize that there's a team of us doing this in partnership with the Department of Agriculture and putting together a really great panel of many exciting speakers from all over.
Cool. Can we talk about that? I mean, this is the Tuesday, October 8th in Lancaster at the Convention Center. Can you tell us sort of how the day is structured and what's in store for attendees?
Sure. Recognizing that there is a lot of interest from many different parties in kind of this hemp space that we're working in right now, we tried to create a dynamic day agenda and speakers attracting to this that would fit interest for a lot of different folks. So the day kind of flows from some plenary sessions in the morning, everyone all together, to a couple breakout sessions that are focused on different areas of interest. So we have what we're calling tracks, one for investors, one for business, and one for kind of the farm base. And then we kind of go back together to a plenary, then break out again to a session, and then pull it all back together at the end of the day for another plenary session.
Okay. Can you talk about who some of the, the featured speakers will be?
Sure, absolutely. So Secretary Russell Redding will kind of kick us off in the morning, and we'll have one of our speakers from GenCanna also coming to speak to us during that session. Later in the day, we're really excited to have in the final session some of our federal regulators from DC coming up to talk about the federal regulatory landscape moving into 2020, which is going to be really important for a lot of supporting industries that are wanting to be involved in supporting hemp. We think about banking, we think about the agencies here at the state level that also need to get involved, that are really kind of waiting on these federal guidelines and really want clear direction from the feds.
Okay.
So we're looking forward to that too.
Okay, good. Yeah, it looks like going to be a great event there in Lancaster. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners about the summit?
Certainly encourage folks that are coming into town, definitely book your rooms at the Lancaster Marriott. We have a room block there. So please feel free to stay and come the night before for the networking reception also on October 7th that we're partnering with Lancaster Farming to host.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. All right. Well, Kelly, thanks very much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Eric. We're really looking forward to this.
Yeah, me too. So, I'm looking forward to the live podcast where we can all be together to talk about hemp, to celebrate the first year of the hemp industry in Pennsylvania. So the way this live podcast show is shaping up, The first part of it is going to be a conversation between two plant breeders, both of whom have been on this show before. But today I thought we'd check in with both of them just to get a sense of what's in store for the live show. Joe Ullman, welcome back to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. How's it going?
Good, Eric. Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so wanted to check in with you, see how things are progressing at your farm out there in Bucks County. Are you in harvest mode right now?
Yeah, we're not harvesting quite yet. We're in the latter stages of a breeding run that's going on. We're at day. Today is day 49 of about an 85-day cycle. We are in flower. We've been in flower for a couple weeks now, and pollen will be flying. Actually, just started this morning. It's probably going to be flying around for about a 10-day period, and that's a good thing because we are breeding in a secluded spot. We don't have any other growers within 5 miles of us, so I feel very confident about no cross pollination.
Oh, good.
So there's no worries there. I've definitely done my. We don't have a fiber grower within 25 miles of us. And no CBD growers with anything going on close to us. The ones that have feminized seed, and their fields have been walked, and they're looking good. Our crop specifically is an auto flowering variety that I intend to bring to market next season for growers next season, and it's about a 70-day flowering time. And it's looking good right now. Now I said 85 days because in order to ripen seed for sale, you have to go a couple extra weeks in order to get that seed to be nice and viable. Because we want all of our growers to be successful, so they need to have good seed that's going to germinate, so that they're not disappointed when it comes time for next spring for sowing the seeds.
Right. Well, that brings me to something here. So you're going to be one of our sort of featured panelists and guests at the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit on the Monday night reception. And you're actually going to be talking about seeds, right? And why it's important to know what your seed farmer and where your seeds come from.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you very much for having, putting that panel together. Myself and Tom Colton are going to be on it. Hopefully I didn't spoil that. But Tom and I are both, we've been speaking about it. We're together. We're very excited. We're both plant breeders, and we both intend to bring good genetics to the Pennsylvania marketplace next season.
All right. So you'll have lots of good information for listeners then at the summit. And for those of you listeners who can't get to the summit, we will be publishing that live podcast a couple days later on the show. So looking forward to some great information about hemp seeds.
Absolutely, Eric. I'm excited to get there and share some knowledge with all your listeners.
Yeah. Is there anything else you want to talk about today?
One thing that popped up when I was just kind of thinking about something was why are seeds and why would a grower choose seeds versus clones?
Right.
And the two reasons. One, seeds produce a taproot. Clones do not. On average, a seeded plant is going to produce about 20% more biomass than a plant from clone. And so that's one reason. And the other reason would be seeds happen to plants grown from seed do better because from a disease perspective, because the seed breaks the life cycle of the disease life cycle. Clones can harbor because you're keeping a mother plant alive for an extended period of time, they are more susceptible to disease. And the only way to break that disease life cycle is to kill the plant you know, effectively 100%, obviously spraying stuff and chemicals and whatnot, and, you know, cultural practices can help, but the only surefire way is to, is for the plant to die, and therefore the disease dies. Right. So here's you know, Mother Nature has developed that over time to, and that's why seeds are produced. So growing from seed, I think, has a lot of advantages, for the grower. And, not that clones are bad. I think clones are very much a part of our industry. But I'd like to see more growers get into seed.
And so you'll be on hand at the summit to answer questions too for people.
Absolutely, I will. Hopefully, I'll also have time to mingle and be social. But I'm really looking forward to your Monday night event, and I can't wait. It should be exciting.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited too. All right, well, we'll see you in Lancaster on October 7th.
Sounds good, Eric. See you there.
All right, thanks, Joe. All right, and like Joe mentioned, the other plant breeder on that panel discussion for the live show is Tom Colton. Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good morning, Eric. Nice to hear from you.
Yeah, so what's going on? Are you in harvest mode right now?
We are in definite harvest mode.
Can you sort of describe the scene at your farm this morning?
I'm sitting here drinking a cup of coffee in my one of the drying barns and overlooking one of our fields being quickly dismantled by about 15 people.
Wow.
Yeah, just happy to get them out of the fields with beautiful weather. I mean, I've been talking to some friends out west, and I guess they're kind of getting a little taste of what we had last year, so...
Yeah, right. A little too much rain out there?
Too much for them. Usually it's kind of dry around now, I think.
Yeah.
So they're not used to the moisture after it, because they had dry last year and they had a beautiful season out there last year. And here we obviously had shit, so.
It ebbs and flows.
It does.
So I was talking to Joe Ullman, and you guys are sort of like the featured guests at the live podcast taping that we're doing at the summit.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joe's going to be talking about seeds. Are you going to be talking about something similar, or what's your approach?
I will be talking about breeding and seeds as well. We're working on some autoflower projects here and as well at other sites. So that's some exciting stuff. Hopefully we'll have some limited selections to offer for the next growing season. That's still up in the air, but it's about a 75% yes. We just kind of have to run some tests and make sure everything's kosher. And yeah, I'm just going to be talking about the work that we've been doing with breeding and approach that we're taking with how we're selecting varieties to work with and what our end result, what we're shooting for.
Cool. You've got some exciting things happening there on the farm, I take it.
It's very exciting times.
Cool. And then you'll be around the summit a little bit longer to maybe answer questions from people and network a little bit?
Absolutely. I'm going to make myself available for both those days. So if anybody wants to talk to me or... I'll be more than willing to, I'll be around.
Cool. Is there anything else hemp related that you want to talk about this morning?
Hemp related. Just everybody out there that's harvesting, beware of your ergonomics, you know, hemp is not worth a lifetime of backaches.
Good advice from Tom Colton.
Yeah, that's right. Farmer yoga.
All right. Good talking to you, Tom.
Great to hear from you, Eric, and have a blessed harvest season.
Okay. Tom and Joe will talk about plant breeding and seeds, and maybe we'll get to hear some more about autoflower. The second part of the live show will be like an open mic. I'm putting together a list of people who would like to say a few words, tell their story, address their hopes, dreams, or concerns, put those thoughts on the record. I've heard from a few people already. Space on the list is limited because time is limited. So you got to get on the ball if you want to get on the list. Send me an email. Send it to podcast@lancasterfarming.com. Okay, moving on to our feature interview with Rich and Nick from Under the Sun Hemp. Okay, Rich and Nicholas, welcome to the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast. Could you guys introduce yourselves for us one at a time? Rich, you go first.
Sure. My name is Richard Yang, and I am one of the partners for Under the Sun Hemp. And I'm coming in as a new hemp farmer. I worked mostly with coffee and teas previously. And in this, in Under the Sun Hemp, I'm managing predominantly the business side and working with the farm that we're growing at and just coordinating all the efforts, the ins and outs, as the farm is an operating farm on other factors.
Okay. And Nicholas?
My name is Nicholas Cole. I'm another one of the partners here at Under the Sun Hemp. I'm also the head grower. My background is in medical marijuana and organic farming.
Okay. So you are all up in Bucks County. Tell me a little bit about where you are and what the farm is like.
Sure. The farm is set on about 100 acres and 69 acres is arable. We do have an apple orchard, a classic CSA farm, growing vegetables all organically and certified organic, USDA certified organic and Pennsylvania certified organic. And, you know, just like many small farms, we were looking for a way to, you know, bump up the revenue. And with the industrial hemp program, we saw this as an opportunity to really liven up the revenue for the farm and bring the farm up to a newer level.
Sure.
You know, we are based in Mooresville, and the farm itself is a bit of an oasis within a suburban area. But given the fact that it's a preserved farmland, we wanted to, you know, maintain some type of growth within the spectrum. And, you know, hemp just seemed like a very interesting venture to step into, and especially with Nicholas joining the farm last year and having the experience, we decided to jump in.
All right. And so how many acres of hemp are you growing? And you said you're growing for CBD?
Yes, we are growing approximately 2 acres.
Okay.
So very small in respect to some of the farms that you've spoken to.
Yep, yep. Can you talk about the varieties that you've got there on those 2 acres?
Sure. I will actually have Nick answer this because he is our product expert.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure. They seem to be a pretty popular strain. We got our varieties from Oregon CBD. We have the Suver Haze, the Hawaiian Haze, and the Lifter.
Okay.
And kind of our reasoning for that is they have an earlier flowering period.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of 12 hours of daylight, they start flower at 15 hours. So
okay,
in the East Coast here with our humidity, it kind of gives us a little bit of an advantage to beat out some of the chill and the wet in the later parts of the month here and next month.
Okay. So you must be in harvesting mode now then, right?
We are full on, yeah. We're going to town.
Can you describe that harvesting process? You know, like what size crew do you have? How are you taking it to the drying facility, et cetera?
Sure. We have our crew size varies depending on volunteers, but our first goal was to fill the newer dry space, the more tuned dry space with our nicest flowers. So right now we're out shaving mostly the tops and the outsides of the plants of the nicer, bigger buds until we have that room filled. And then we'll use the rest and cut down this whole plant and hang for biomass. But so what we've been doing basically is Rich and myself, since we've been out with the plants the most, we'll go out and we'll cut the flower, and that'll get taken by somebody to a truck that drives it down a little ways to the barn where we have our structure built to dry. And
okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask about that drying facility. Is that a new piece of infrastructure that you just put in this year?
Yes.
Can you describe that facility and, you know, what sort of went into creating it?
Sure. So that's one of the efforts that we had. I'm sure many other new industrial hemp farmers hit a snag on in respect to where to dry and needing to meet the specifications that I think in one of your podcasts with the metrics that are needed for a dry space.
Mm-hmm.
Our initial space just was deemed too small. So we actually had to build a 6,500 cubic feet structure within an existing barn that's on the property.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, when we actually just finished that about 5 days ago, over a 7 day period where, you know, Nick and I were, you know, doing a lot of labor, but we did also have a experienced contractor that was helping us with the build.
Always a good move.
Yes.
Okay. So, what is sort of like the hanging structure in there? Like, what are you hanging the plants on?
So currently we have, it's about 10 feet high, and we simply got some wires that's strung up on the top and around, I think, 9.5 feet, and then another set at 5 feet. And from those wires, we have trellis netting hanging from there, and mm-hmm. that's where we are hanging the flower to be dried.
And then do you have what, like a system of fans and dehumidifiers?
Yes, we do have two air conditioning units and dehumidifiers that are running in there. You know, it's not running all day long. It's just depending on what the weather situation is.
Mm-hmm.
And these aren't anything sophisticated. They are simply your classic room air conditioners and maybe like basement dehumidifiers.
Oh, okay.
Because partly is, you know, cost factors. We are running pretty... we're trying to, you know, tighten our belts as best as we can.
Sure.
And, you know, which requires us to do a lot of hands-on monitoring throughout the day.
Okay. And so how are you keeping up, like, with the moisture levels? Like, when are you going to know that it's done?
We do have a moisture meter in the dry room, and we're checking it daily.
Okay.
We are, you know, Nicholas, as the product expert, is leading the, you know, the observation and also making the determination of when we finish the drying.
Are there any sort of hard lessons you learned in construction of this drying facility that, you know, if you were giving advice to someone who was about to do it, give them some advice?
Well, yeah, for sure. One is plan out exactly where what you need and where you're going to get it from. Because, I mean, we probably were at Home Depot like... twice a day for several days because we overlooked something, or they didn't have it at one store, so we had to go to another, or have enough of what we needed. You know, we're not construction workers. we had the contractor help for about the 2 days to put up the main skeletal parts of the build, and then we had to get the rest of it. But definitely have a solid plan down for that.
Okay.
Yeah. And a lot of it is trial and error. If you were actually here and had a chance to see the dry room, you'll see that even the way that we designed, we put up the plastic around the ceiling and on the walls, you know, one side of the dry room is amateur hour. It is us trying three different methodologies until we finally got the, you know, the easiest way out there, and just keep hacking away at it, keep planning. And
yep,
to be honest, it just, you know, without being construction experts, we just did the best that we could. And, you know, it turned out much better than I think both of us had hoped.
Do you have a buyer lined up, or do you have a plan for after harvest?
Yes. So we do have some interested parties. We can't commit to any sales yet, just as PDA would, we would need to wait for PDA to give us clearance for that.
Sure.
We did pass all of the PDA testing limits, but until we get that confirmation, we actually just have to hold on to it for now.
Okay.
And the more interesting thing was our first interest was actually for the stalks and not the flowers, as we had been focusing on this whole summer, just growing.
Oh, okay. And so do you have a buyer lined up to buy the stalks then once you harvested your flowers?
Yes. So the individual has already requested to purchase all of the stalks. And we do have an interested party for the flowers as well.
Okay.
And the gap now is really, you know, we will have quite a bit of biomass.
Right.
And trying to, you know, we did mentally prepare that for dried biomass and wet biomass. And now it's just a, you know, waiting game of, you know, speaking to more people, understanding what they need.
Right.
And then we can, you know, design our product for that.
Okay. Can you talk about your CBD percentages?
We are actually waiting for the COA as we speak.
Yep.
We sent off our third test. We've been testing on a weekly basis just to, you know, maintain the 0.3%.
Right.
And hopefully in the next, you know, I'm going to call up and make a call and follow up this afternoon. But hopefully everything's on par. And, you know, as we harvest now, whatever this test comes back with, it will help us determine the pre-sale amount.
Right.
And hopefully we'll get moving.
Yeah, right. So this was your first year growing hemp. What would you do differently? What will you do differently next year, you know, sort of on the front end?
Quite a bit. I feel like I have a notebook full of stuff to redo for next year. But, you know, we were dry farming, and we didn't have any plastic or fabric. We did throw some cover crop down through the rows, some clover.
Mm-hmm.
We were lucky that the weeds weren't too brutal for us, but I'd certainly like to cut down a lot of that extra labor, drip irrigation for next year.
Right.
And, some landscape fabric. I'm not a big fan of the plastic for the rows. You know, you're just picking that out of the fields for a month after that there.
Right.
I think we'll be doing a heavier compost teas next season. That seemed to be inoculating the fields, seemed to have some really great results, and keeping that up on a foliar process as well. We hope will help cut down on risks from molds or bacteria, that sort of thing.
Have you had much sort of pressure from pests or diseases this year? Any mold, any powdery mildew, that sort of thing?
Yeah, no downy mildew. We did have a little leaf septoria, like yellow leaf spot, come mm-hmm. through, which we were able to stop the spread of with some activated aerated compost tea.
Cool.
And the caterpillars have been out in full force as well. You know, it's tough. You really can't do much. You know, you can't spray. We tried not to spray at all, but we definitely don't want to spray in flower. We're trying to stave off that mold. We don't want to give it a home to grow more. But yeah, we had some caterpillar issues, but we'll be keeping those in check next year, I think.
Okay. Will you be doing the same amount of plants next year, or like 2 acres, you said?
Yeah, I mean, we're still kind of looking at that. I mean, I guess it will depend on who's buying, what people want this season. But mm-hmm. I personally would like to, you know, go smaller and focus on more boutique, well, better tended to flowers, because we'd ultimately get much larger yields out of less plants if we were both able to fully treat them, train them, and prune them properly,
mm-hmm.
Which we were able to do some in a small garden we had off to the side this year that had some really killer results. But, you know, we didn't want to mess too hard with the field out there on the off chance that the plants didn't like it for some reason.
Hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you want to tell us about your operation?
Sure. I mean, one of the things, one of the pests that we also were confronted with was the corn borers, which I believe was affecting many other farmers in PA.
Mm-hmm.
But for us, it was specific because where we are growing now was a cornfield and not edible cornfield. It was actually an entertainment cornfield where during the fall we have, you know, the classic fall events on the farm, and we used, it was a corn maze, and, you know, that was shortened a little bit to make room for the hemp. But you know, that we definitely were not thinking that corn borers would be as big of an early effect as it actually was.
What kind of effect did they have on the plants?
On the flower, very minimal, but on the stalks themselves, they were attacking mm-hmm. quite vigorously. And, you know, as Nicholas mentioned, we were able to stave most of them off. using predatory wasps and also, you know, good compost tea. So overall, you know, we got them under control. And the challenge now, as Nicholas mentioned, is the caterpillars, which during the week we were building the dry space, not being able to get out to the field and inspect as on a daily basis as much as we liked, that really allowed the caterpillars to, you know, gain some girth and, you know, chew a little bit more than we liked.
Right. Huh. Okay. Well, it's great to talk to you guys today. Do you want to offer any, you know, like contact information or some info about your business?
Sure. You know, you can find us on Instagram at Under the Sun Hemp. And, you know, we believe in sharing our knowledge as best as we can. So anyone that wants to ask us about building the dry space or, you know, some of the ways that we manage the pest, they can send us an email at team@underthesunhemp.com. Or call us at 215-403-5777. And you can ask for Rich or Nick.
All right. That was Rich Yang and Nicholas Cole from Under the Sun Hemp. So before we wrap things up, I wanted to try something new today. So a couple of weeks ago, I was in one of those Facebook hemp groups, and someone posed the question, if hemp can do everything plastics can do, can someone provide an example of the exception? What hemp can't do? What plastic does better? So I thought that was a really interesting question. And if there's one person qualified to answer it, it's Ron Kander. He's a materials scientist at Jefferson University in Philadelphia. And if you haven't listened to episode 41 of this podcast, my interview with Dr. Kander will fascinate you. Anyway, I emailed Dr. Kander the question, and he sent me this audio answer.
The question was, if hemp can do everything plastics can someone provide an example of the exception? What hemp can't do or plastic does better? That is a great question. Hi, my name is Dr. Ron Kander at Thomas Jefferson University, and here is my quick answer. Hemp has quite a few advantages as a highly sustainable source of biomass that can be used as a feedstock in making a wide range of industrial and consumer products. One potential use of hemp is as a raw material in making biodegradable polymers, or as a biodegradable reinforcing agent in polymers, either in traditional polymers or in biodegradable polymers. In fact, reinforcing hemp-derived polymers with hemp-derived fibers can produce a biodegradable composite material with attractive mechanical and physical properties. The sustainability and biodegradability of hemp-derived polymers and composites is balanced, however, by the fact that currently, at least, these materials tend to have higher costs and somewhat lower mechanical and physical properties as compared with traditional polymers. Traditional polymers are made from hydrocarbons that are typically derived from natural gas, crude oil, or some oil derivative like tar sands. The key advantage of typical polymers and polymer-based composites, the ones we use in everyday consumer goods, is their lightweight, toughness, and relatively low cost. Although there are some very expensive high-performance polymers in applications like aerospace and defense. Traditional polymers, however, are relatively easy to mold into complex shapes, have reasonably good mechanical properties, not as good as metals and ceramics, but good enough for a wide range of applications, and they have great durability in a wide range of environments. It is this last property that is the Achilles heel of biodegradable polymers and composites, whether they're made from hemp or some other biomass like corn, wood, or soybean. The simple fact that these materials are biodegradable, which is good, means they break down by bacterial decomposition over time. This means they will not be as durable as traditional polymers and composites in typical consumer environments like water, UV light, heat, oxygen, etc. So, hemp-derived polymers have many advantages, but are outperformed by traditional polymers when it comes to cost, mechanical properties, and long-term durability. Research and development efforts can reduce the cost and improve mechanical properties, but it will be difficult to address the long-term durability problem if we want the material to remain biodegradable. So, this is Dr. Ron Kander, and that was my quick answer to a very good question.
Thanks, Dr. Kander. All right, so that does it for me. Remember, get your tickets for the Pennsylvania Hemp Summit. You can go to teampa.com/ PA Hemp Summit. All right, my name is Eric Herlock. I'm the digital editor at Lancaster Farming. And until next time, I'll see you in the newspaper. This episode of the Lancaster Farming Industrial Hemp Podcast is copyright 2019 by Lancaster Farming, which is part of the Steinman Communications family. Today's show was written and recorded, edited and produced by Eric Herlock. The music you hear is courtesy of Tin Bird Shadow. To learn more about Tin Bird Shadow, go to tinbirdshadow.bandcamp.com.
Industrial hemp.